You're listening to Severance by Andy Evans. Chapter 8, Unlocking the Puzzle. The man in the suit was becoming increasingly agitated that thus far he had not heard from his colleague. He never worked alone and was fully expecting to hear from his compatriot at any time. But nothing came. No contact was made. And as time ticked by, he began to realize that if he was to achieve his end goal, he would have to begin his work in anticipation of being joined at a later point. This ridiculous dust bowl of a moon was so far off the grid that it was just possible the only contact that might have been made could have been prevented simply because of its location in the known verse. The message on the case formerly attached to his wrist had got through, though, so why had he heard nothing from his partner? Once again, he found himself eyeing the paperwork from within his case. His task was simple. Terminate with extreme prejudice. And it was a task he could achieve alone if necessary, but he remained unsure as to how he would exit Severance if his partner did not arrive with alternative transport as agreed. In his hand, he held a grainy photograph showing a man in uniform, possibly lifted from a security camera's recording. The picture was unclear. It was difficult to see the man's features. The man in question was heavy-set and brandishing a gun in front of a crowd of onlookers. It was only one in a series of equally grainy images. They showed the retreat of a uniformed man on another world. He was firing indiscriminately as he fought his way towards a craft. An Alliance craft, designed to carry a crew of up to 3 adults over short distances. It allowed personnel to land on a planet while their base ship remained in orbit and just around the planet waiting the return of the craft. As each photo in the montage progressed, an increasing death toll became apparent as the man stops at nothing to make his escape. In the final frame, the floor is awash with corpses of official Alliance soldiers, with just a rear shot of the man's shoulder as he's entering the craft. This man, this target, clearly comes with a government health warning, thought the man in the suit. It would be a good reason to watch one's back if confronted by a man who was clearly desperate and yet clearly well equipped to kill without a moment's hesitation. This man was wanted for crimes against the Alliance. There was a bounty on his head, but it was not the bounty that attracted this man in the suit. It was the sense of purpose, the sense of duty. He knew never to question the authority in the chain of command. And, by never doing so, he was never left questioning whether he had done the right thing. In fact, now, he rather enjoyed his work. But this man, his intended target, had been a rather naughty boy back in the day, and had caused a lot of problems for the powers that be. He had stolen a key asset of the Alliance and killed a number of government-level personnel in doing so. If the man in the suit and his partner were able to prove unable to achieve their task, then someone else would be sent. Someone even more deadly. Someone even more specialized in the hunting and killing of enemies of the Alliance. A special operative would be assigned to the case. That thought brought a chill to the man in the suit. But the chill was not one merely of fear for himself. You see, he prided himself in his 100% kill rate on missions such as these. Never had the Alliance had to ramp up their efforts once he had been allocated a target. It was a professional pride that prevented him from even contemplating the need to involve an operative in his team. He would not fail. Even in the unlikely event of his partner failing to make contract, he would ensure that this man, this enemy of the Alliance, would indeed be terminated with extreme prejudice. So he was looking for a man with a strong military bearing who had since gone to ground and was trying to avoid popping up on the radar by living on one of the quietest moons on the very edge of the known verse. Someone who had served the military with distinction and yet who, according to records, had betrayed everything he held to be true in a single, self-serving effort to strip the Alliance of one of its key assets. but he would not escape the long arm of justice. Not at all. He could not escape from the blue hands that were behind him. So gathering his things up and replacing them in the case, the man reset the numeric code on the case and placed it alongside the armchair, as it had been until it was released from his wrist. Then he picked up a small unit, which he placed inside his jacket pocket, and opened the door of his apartment into the bright sunlight of the street before him. He placed on a pair of tinted glasses to shield his eyes from the glare, but his pallid complexion seemed to blanch further still as he stepped out into the bright sunlight. Now was the time to see if his preparation had been as meticulous as he had hoped. He prepared for this visit by examining and memorizing the geography of the town, using a series of satellite images and maps in conjunction with photographs of the streets and the town itself. And thanks to a photographic memory, he was able to swiftly navigate the streets until he arrived at the sheriff's office. He walked up the steps towards the storm riders, and a gun was thrust in his face by a single monosyllabic thug. With great speed, he reached out and grabbed the man's windpipe with a deft and swift movement. He squeezed, and the man blacked out in a matter of seconds. Throwing the thug's body to the floor, he proceeded to enter the office. Inside, four more thugs, along with Abercrombie, worked on the information provided thus far. He reached inside his jacket and flicked the switch. Nobody knew what had hit him. Blood started to emerge from their eyes, from their noses, from their mouths. But he walked directly towards Abercrombie and placed headphones over his ears just as he was blacking out. He knew that the thugs could offer him nothing, but a computer specialist was altogether different. Abercrombie was still reeling in shock at what was transpiring when the man in the suit with blue gloves placed those headphones over his ears. But as he did, he blacked out. Everything went crimson. Deep, dark crimson. He awoke, uncertain as to how long he had been unconscious, and still unsure as to what had happened. He looked around for a clue and found sheer devastation. Every one of the storm riders was dead. Blood was still escaping through any and every orifice on their body. But as he looked round, he saw the man in the suit sitting patiently, poring through printouts of the data he had been working on. "Welcome back to the land of the living, Mr. Abercrombie," he said. "Cooperate and you'll be able to remain with us. Resist and you'll join their co-workers in their fate."
They kidnapped me. Weren't you on the same flight as me? You know I came in on the last transits of arrivals here on Severance. I'm not one of them."
"Honestly, Mr. Abercrombie, if you can't tell me the truth, then who will you tell the truth to? Now stop lying or face your untimely end in a pool of your own blood. I know who you are. I know what you're capable of and why you're here. So stop lying and help me find this man." He held up an image. Amos squinted to see what was before him. It was the closed circuit printout that he'd seen earlier in the man's apartment.
"It's not very good. It looks old. Who is it? Should I know him?"
"He was, and to all intents still is, a rogue agent. A brown coat operating under the banner and auspices of the Alliance. A man who betrayed everything in the Alliance. A dangerous man. A man capable of killing without thought or concern. A man named General Mara. A former officer of the Alliance."
"An officer? You had a general who spied for the Browncoats? And he's what this is all about? Judge and his mercenaries and you? You're all here trying to flush out a spy?"
"He is here, on Severance. He will die by my hand. Judge and his men will not claim the reward for my handiwork. I will eradicate anyone and everyone who stands in my way. But Mara is not the goal. Mara is an obstacle. I need what he stole from the Alliance. I need to return it to its proper owners, intact. That is a matter of professional pride. This Mara, he's still dangerous? Oh, yes. At the time of his defection, he was undergoing special training. He was destined to take up a post as an operative, a man who would cease to exist in the official world, a man with no name, no history, a man who records that he would never have existed. But he disappeared before completing his training. He is now considered to be corrupted in his programming. He is now considered to be a danger to the Alliance. He must be terminated. Then I can take what rightly belongs to the Alliance off this ball of dust and return to the core. So what do you want me to do? You can see I haven't broken the codes on this computer yet. I mean, it's just BK/851/XKU/6/F99b/3. Simple when you know how. Abercrombie typed the code into the computer. Suddenly, the security locks all fell away. The computer was released. With shocked realization and a trembling voice, Abercrombie asked, "If you knew the code, why did you need me here? You can gain access to the information you require easily now. Why have you kept me alive?" "Because I don't work alone, Mr. Abercrombie. While I am attending to my business, I need you to do something for me. I need you to contact my colleague who is on his way to this godforsaken place, to let him know where I've got to on this project. Betray me and die. Help me, I'll allow you to live. Simple. Just tell me what I need to do. I'll do it. I didn't fly all the way out here just to die in a pool of my own blood like these fools. I can be your eyes, your ears on the cortex. Just let me live." You have been listening to Severance by Andy Evans, Chapter 8, Unlocking the Puzzle, read by Andy Evans. The music heard in this podcast is provided under a Creative Commons license courtesy of Magnatunes. It features the work of Claire Fitch and Shira Kamen. Further details of the tracks used can be obtained from magnatunes.com. Listen again for Chapter 9, coming soon.